And we are now ready for the second case of this morning, Zurich Capital against Asset Allocation. And while we're waiting to start the argument, I wanted to make an announcement simply that we do have the motion that was filed yesterday in the associated papers. The panel has decided to take that motion along with the case. We will take it under advisement in the course of our deliberation. So please go ahead.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. Your Honors, if I may, I would like to not deal with three of the questions presented by the appellees, the question of mootness, appellate jurisdiction, and whether a bond is mandatory until my rebuttal. I'd like to argue for about 10 minutes, directed at the merits, listen to what my opponents say, and then perhaps respond to that. I think I reserve 5 minutes if I could reserve the balance of what I don't use.
Pay attention to your white light and you'll be fine.
All right, fine. Thank you, Your Honor. In trying to formulate my thoughts for this morning's arguments to try to get to the crux of what our position is, it seemed to me that essentially 2 points bear beginning my argument with. Fundamentally, what happened in this case is that a creditor of a partnership, having obtained a preliminary injunction to freeze the assets, the remaining assets of the partnership, got those remaining assets, about $2 million in cash, which were basically investment proceeds of my client's investments.
But can I ask you, though, it seems to me when all is said and done, what this preliminary injunction, and I'm willing for the time being to set to one side whatever we may decide about, although it's a little bit backwards, but whatever we may decide about jurisdiction. Let's assume, though, that the order of August 2nd modified the preliminary injunction, and then the later order modified the modification, and so we're at least in terms of one of these appeals up on an appeal from a modification of a preliminary injunction. What this case is all about at this little microcosm of it is moving money around. It's not about the merits of your claims. It's about money, and it seems to me you either had a right to particular assets, in which case nothing that could have happened in the settlement in this now three-cornered litigation, you know, with Zurich and with asset allocation with the interveners, can prejudice your right to get those assets ultimately, as long as you know where they are, or, which seems more likely to me, this case is actually really just about money, in which case you don't have a right to any particular dollar bill versus another dollar bill, and at the very best, it's only abuse of discretion as to whether the district court was right to think that Zurich is good for it in the final analysis, and it might not even be that under the Grupo Mexicano decision of the Supreme Court. So I'm skeptical that at the end of the day, all of this arguing about who's holding the funds in the meantime is something you can prevail on. And I'm also very unclear about what, in particular, at this stage of the game, your claim is against Zurich in particular. So it looks to me like you don't have any pending claim against Zurich. You do, obviously, against asset allocation. You've got your problems with the general partner and all the rest of it, but why isn't this simply abuse of discretion about who's going to pay you eventually if you can prove your right to recover?
Well, there are three or four questions in there, and I think let me answer first the factual question. What kind of claims do we have against Zurich? We have essentially three pending claims against Zurich in this case by the folks that they sued, partners who received back redemptions before.
No, but I thought you were the people who hadn't gotten the money. Zurich filed its suit against the people who had gotten redemptions, right?
And in our
case, your clients didn't get the redemptions. That's the whole problem.
Right. In this case, there are essentially two sets of limited partners.
Right.
The interveners and the original defendants who've counterclaimed.
Right.
In this case, the original defendants who counterclaim have pending claims for securities fraud, for commodity
that.
Fraud.
But what
and
about your client?
In a related case, in the companion case that my client filed independently, we have identical claims against Zurich.
But you don't, in this case, have any claim filed against Zurich.
Not in this case, but we do have pending claims filed against Zurich, which are identical to the claims that the partners who got sued have asserted as counterclaims. So there are pending claims by the appellants, who are the interveners. And the reason that...
But why should we use this case as a vehicle to essentially do an end run around the Supreme Court's decision in the Grupo Mexicano case?
Because this case has now proceeded to the point where we got equitable relief with the dissolution of the partnership, with the removal of the general partner, and particularly an order of accounting. We now have equitable relief, so this is not as to the issue of the propriety of injunctive relief. Simply,
but you didn't have it back when the district court was making its rulings. How can we impose on district courts an abuse of discretion standard for not knowing what was going to happen 2 years later?
Well, this is a continuing story, and one of the alternative forms of relief that we asked for is a remand of this case down to the district court to take into account those subsequent events.
So why is that the right vehicle as opposed to simply saying the district court did the right thing at the time, at least within the boundaries of the abuse of discretion standard that we apply, and let the present take care of itself?
Well, first of all, we think it's a legal question that's presented, and that has to do with the construction of the preliminary injunction. And a preliminary injunction is designed as traditional office. It's a quotation virtually, essentially, from one of this court's cases. The traditional office of a preliminary injunction is to preserve the status quo. And the status quo was that the money was remaining in the partnership. It was the investment proceeds.
That's not what the original preliminary injunction said at all, though. The preliminary injunction, as originally entered, said it could go either to under the control of the court or to Zurich.
Well, Judge Lindbergh construed the injunction twice. And he held that the injunction was, by its terms, imposed to preserve the assets in place pending an adjudication of all the claims. And the difficulty that we have now is that the partnership has been stripped of its assets, the money's been transferred to Zurich, and there are other events, business events, that are not of record in this case because it is a continuing story, that suggests to us the possibility that Zurich is not good for it. There is a conclusion by the district court judge, basically, that Zurich is backed by the financial obligation, essentially, of another party. But there are no findings of fact that support that conclusion. There's no evidence in the record to support the conclusion that they're good. Now that this case has progressed to the point of equitable relief, it seems to us that we're entitled to return that money to the court. We don't see any prejudice to anybody to do that, return that money. We say to the court, because we ask the relief of returning it to the registry of the court, so then we can have a full adjudication of all of our claims.
Well, I understand if you want the money, but the problem is, you're asking us to review particular orders of the district court, and you're asking us to review them not in the light of anything that was before the district court at the time, and not in the light of any claim that you then had or that you were pursuing, but in the light of something years later. And it seems to me very odd to say, when the district court made, I think, a reasonable determination that Zurich wasn't going to abscond with the funds itself, you know, if this is just about money, after a final judgment, you can pursue that money any way you can pursue it.
Well, and then sort of putting it another way, aren't you asking us to reinstate an order which required court approval before transfer of the frozen funds to DCM? But isn't the reality that all the transfers from asset allocation to DCM were made pursuant to court order?
Well, they were only made pursuant to court order based on the representation, essentially, of my opponents that...
That doesn't mean it wasn't a court order, though.
Well, no, but it was conditional on evaluation of the motion for reconsideration, and the motion for reconsideration was based on the discovery that the general partner of the partnership had absconded with the funds. There's an abuse of, the standard is going to be abuse of discretion. Then there is an abuse of discretion here, because essentially what happened is that the order of December 19th was based on a representation that there would remain $420,000 in the partnership and therefore it would not be judgment proof. The day after
but
that
then
order,
the district court went beyond that, even after it found out, because you called to its attention that the $420,000 might not be there. That really just meant, instead of just $420,000 worth looking at asset allocation, and I'll add parenthetically, it has surprised me throughout this that your clients were only asking in the aggregate for $420,000, but be that as it may, the district court basically said that just means Zurich is holding this. This is essentially a dispute between a creditor and a limited partner, or a group of limited partners, that can be resolved.
Well, I guess our point is that if we get the money back into the partnership, then we can satisfy the judgment that we've obtained against the partnership with those proceeds. What's essentially happened is that they have stripped the money from one of the judgment debtors. We have a judgment against the partnership that we can execute, and what we would execute on would be assets that have been transferred to Zurich.
There's a legal issue there that can be adjudicated in the fullness of time, and I realize there are these settlements out there too, which is whether those actually are assets of the partnership, or whether even way back when Zurich had a superior claim to those assets, they were in a sense already spoken for. I don't want to, obviously it's not for us today to make a decision about that, but you're making a lot of assumptions about what the fate of those assets would be, and I'm not sure that those are going to work out in the end.
No, my point is this, that the money should be returned to safekeeping pending the adjudication of all the claims, and that's essentially what Judge Lindbergh
held.
But if
it's only about safekeeping, why isn't it safe in Zurich's hands?
Well, because, Your Honor, there's no evidence in this record showing, supporting the conclusion of the district court that Zurich is good for it. Secondarily, I'm hamstrung by the fact that there have been business developments outside the record in this case that raise questions about that. I have representations that have been repeated in the record that Zurich is good for the money, and everybody knows that Zurich is a big international conglomerate and the like. But the problem is that it's not sufficient just to make that conclusion on the representation of counsel without some kind of evidentiary presentation to it. And I would say, Your Honor, go ahead,
finish it.
I just was going to answer one question. We did not just ask for $420,000.
I didn't think so.
No, our claim was, what happened was is as follows, that when the pool got in trouble, the general partner offered all the partners the chance to withdraw their money. Some did, some did not. My clients did not. The amount of money that they were seeking was about $1.3 million. That's the remainder of the investment. The $420,000 is essentially what Zurich and Mr. Alamian promised would remain in the estate of the partnership if the money were approved pursuant to transfer, and it's that $420,000 that we found out had been stolen and is not there. So the general partner stole the money, the creditor got the rest. And the original point I was going to make, excuse me, Your Honor, for running on, is that they got the money without any evidentiary support, without any presentation of evidence, without any discovery by us, without any adversary hearing, without presenting any witnesses at all, not subjected to cross-examination.
But isn't that subject to the ultimate resolution on the merits of this case?
No, it seems to me that to the extent that there is interim interlocutory relief regarding the remaining assets of one of the judgment debtors, the central judgment debtor here is the partnership, and we have a judgment for commodity fraud against that judgment. And what's happened is that a creditor who has not been put to the test of proving the claim without any adversary hearing, without the presentation of any evidence, has essentially swept up the remaining assets and left our judgment debtor bereft of any assets to collect on. That's what really happened here. There was no adversary proceeding at which they made a presentation subject to cross-examination and investigation. During the process of the briefing and the argument about the preliminary injunction, every day brought a new development, some of them startling.
No, I understand that, but I'm just, you're jumping ahead in a sense, because all of this begins when Zurich sues that first set of limited partners who took advantage, as it were, of the redemption offer. Zurich's position, as I understand it from the briefs anyway, and I'm sure there's plenty about this case that can't get captured in the briefs, but my understanding is, Zurich's feeling is, that they shouldn't have even gotten those redemptions because this was all subject to the loan, the loan that Zurich was giving to asset allocation. And there's a lot in the merits about who owns this money and where it belongs that needs still to be worked out.
Well, that's right. But the problem is that what happened as to the frozen assets is they got it without proving their case.
Well, they're holding them. When you say they got it, there's no judicial decree that says this is yours now and forever. Is there? There isn't.
Your Honor, I think the effect,
I
hadn't thought of that nuance about the preliminary injunction, but this money has been transferred to a claimant. And the claimant is holding
it. The claimant might have to pay it back. I mean, I guess that's how it seems to me, but maybe I'm wrong. You know, I'll be happy to be educated.
Well, when you look at the orders that you've appealed, what I'm trying to get at, is there any basis from which we could order ZCM to return any of the money it has received in light of what the orders say and what the orders of the district court were?
Yes, Your Honor, one of the pages of my brief, I cite the representations of Mr. Vickery in which he says we have to get this money out of the custody of Mark Alamian, and if the motion to reconsider is granted and we are told to return the money, we will do that. There's an express representation by counsel in the record, and it's cited in my rebuttal, Your Honor. I'll bring the page to your attention. It's a long quote, unusually long for my briefs. They represented they would return it if the motion for reconsideration.
We can look at the quote.
Yeah, definitely. All right, we will hear from you in a few minutes. And now, Ms. Rocket.
May it please the Court, my name is Courtney Rocket. I'm representing the Zurich entities, the plaintiffs' appellees. Chris, I would like to start with answering a number of the questions the panel raised, and I disagree with a number of the statements made by Mr. Gigas. I guess we'll work backwards. I remember the most recent one was, is there any way that this Court can order Zurich to return the money to either the registry of the Court or to the interveners? And the answer to that question is no. There are no pending claims in the district court action that gave rise to this appeal in which the interveners can obtain money from Zurich. The claims referenced by Mr. Gigas brought by the interveners are in a separate district court action that is not on appeal before you. And Mr. Vickery's statement to the court was in connection with the...
Let me just clarify that your position would be in a sense, not that this court doesn't have the power to undo orders of the district court in this case, because we surely do have such power, but that underlying those orders was some assumption about an adversary proceeding between these plaintiffs and Zurich that you say is missing.
Precisely.
And because it was never filed, or because it's part of a settlement between yourselves and them?
Oh, no, actually, the interveners did attempt to bring exactly the claim that they're seeking relief for here today.
That's what I thought.
Uniform and Fraudulent Transfer Act claim would be the
part of the settlement that Zurich had with your original defendants, right?
Oh, no, this is, yes, they were going to transfer.
They were going to claim that that was a fraudulent transfer.
Exactly, they were going to challenge that transfer, which is what they're doing here in their arguments on appeal.
Right.
So they sought leave to amend to file a Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act claim. That motion was denied with prejudice, and that order denying the UFTA claim with prejudice is not on appeal to this court today. In fact, when the interveners entered into a consent judgment with the Alamian defendants in the interveners action, bringing that to a close, I believe the interlocutory decision of the court denying the interveners leave to file a UFTA claim merged with that final judgment, and 30 days have passed and they have not appealed.
Well, it's not a final judgment until all claims of all parties are resolved. So unless they were looking for 54B relief, if it was part of this case, they really couldn't appeal it yet.
I thought that all claims brought by the interveners in this action.
But that doesn't resolve all claims of all parties have to be resolved before you have a 1291 final judgment. So they'd have to wait until the last little T was crossed and I dotted, unless they could get the district court to give us a 54B.
At which point an appeal from that final judgment
that would part could have been possible. I'm not sure they're too late, though, at this point. That seems too much.
Okay, so when that does come back up before this court, that is when
we can only wait.
Can be granted. Now, addressing Mr. Vickery's comments at the hearing, of course, this was a motion for reconsideration in which Judge St. Eve said, if it turns out that I was incorrect, is this money going to be able to come back into the court? And the answer to that is, of course, that Mr. Vickery was just simply confirming that if the interveners did make the requisite showing that Judge St. Eve should not have vacated the modification of the preliminary injunction, that the money would be put back. Now, I know that Mr. Gekas didn't want to address the issue of mootness until after I spoke on that, but I think it is important to note that all of the claims in the district court brought by the interveners have been dismissed or adjudicated. There is a final consent judgment that they negotiated and has been entered below. There is no...
That's why I was interested in particular claims against you, because in your brief you mentioned the two settlement agreements, the one that you alluded to a minute ago, but then you also mentioned a settlement, a consent judgment, this is on page 15 of your brief, among interveners, asset allocations, and all other cross-claim defendants. The missing link there, if you will, is Zurich. So if this is really all over between the interveners and everybody, that's properly before the court, then that's obviously important for us to know.
That is correct. That is correct. I think what also might be confusing the court is there was another consent, basically consent injunction entered below that is discussed in the papers, in which the interveners requested, after they had lost their motions, that all money coming to asset allocation in the future and held by the limited partners and anyone and Chicago Title be placed into the registry of the court. And that was entered on the consent of all parties, and all money is to be has been transferred into the court registry. And it's interesting to note that that was injunctive relief requested by the interveners, granted by the court in a preliminary injunction by consent, and there was no bond posted.
So what's left of this case in the district court? For anybody, you know, Zurich or your original defendants or the interveners,
are there
proceedings pending?
There are proceedings pending by Zurich against the limited partner defendants who did receive
their distributions. Okay.
Right.
So those are still going on. So in a sense, although this consent judgment referenced the July 18, 2003 consent judgment resolves the claims against this, if after a hypothetical final judgment, if I can call it that, the interveners were able to challenge the district court's refusal to allow them to assert this uniform fraudulent transfers claim against you, that could hypothetically come back to life? Is that?
Yes, it could.
Okay.
Now, I would like to address the merits of some of these arguments, of some of these appeals, including a few jurisdictional issues. For instance, on the bond motion, the interveners raised precisely the same arguments in front of Judge St. Eve as they had raised in front of Judge Lindbergh. It was a successive motion trying to get away from the fact that they didn't appeal from the denial of the first motion to vacate that preliminary injunction. They didn't argue changed circumstances, therefore it should not be considered in order within 28 U.S.C. 1292. On the standing issue, both Judge Lindbergh and Judge St. Eve held that the interveners lacked standing to request the posting of a bond, as they were not the enjoined parties, and the enjoined parties had consented to entry of the preliminary injunction without posting of a bond.
But looking at this as a glass is half full instead of half empty, it seems to me if we have jurisdiction over at least one of these interlocutory appeals, even if it's not the one about the bond. I'm thinking particularly about maybe 03-1820, which is the district court's order granting your motion to reconsider the August 2nd order, vacating that order, and essentially reinstating what was the original preliminary injunction. That seems to me the soundest ground of appellate jurisdiction here, since I would say the August 2nd order, by changing the ability to pay directly to Zurich, was a significant modification. At least it's been your position that was a significant modification of the injunction. That was in place until December, at which time the injunction gets modified back again. That's a modification, too, in that direction that you wanted. So surely we do have jurisdiction over that.
Yes. Zurich is not contending that the court lacks jurisdiction over those two orders, because we do contend that it was a modification and a vacation of a modification.
Okay.
It's only if the interveners are correct in arguing that that's actually a clarification and not a modification that the court wouldn't have jurisdiction under.
Right. So your position, at least, is that we do have jurisdiction over 1820.
Yes.
And then the question is, in a sense, what is going to go along with that? Is there any supplemental appellate jurisdiction over this dispute about the bond or some of these other orders?
Correct, if they're going to review mm-hmm. anything underlying the entry of the original preliminary injunction. But again, to fall back on the mootness argument, even if the order vacating the modification was reinstated and this went back down, the transfer of the funds to Zurich was pursuant to three separate orders of the court, which are not on appeal here today. And again, Judge St. Eve was fully aware of the changed circumstances of Mr. Alamian's theft of the $420,000 that was supposed to remain with the partnership. And let me point out, it was supposed to remain with the partnership subject to the preliminary injunction. It was not automatically going to go to the interveners if the parties litigated additional claims in the future. And Zurich has not released asset allocation. That money could also essentially come back to Zurich if necessary. So
that gets to Judge Williams' point. I mean, whether or not this injunction was modified, it looks like everything was moving according to court order anyway.
It was. And Judge Saney was fully aware of Mr. Alamian's dissipation of the $420,000. Is there any further questions? Thank you. We ask that Judge Saney orders all four of them be affirmed, as there is no abuse of discretion in this case. Thank you.
You have 4 minutes remaining.
Thank you, Your Honor. The quotation, I think, of what Mr. Vickery said is at pages 24 and 25 of my brief. I also reference the intervener's claims in the related case, the Ontario case, at page 19 of the brief. The intervener's do have pending claims that have passed muster with the district court. Indeed, if Your Honors will grant me leave to file a one-page reference to the record, one of the opinions denying Zurich's motion to dismiss the other defendant's counterclaims references the identical opinion in the other case, in the Ontario case. Essentially what happened, two cases, identical claims, the interveners are in the other case. She denied their motion to dismiss that other case, and then in this case, she adopted the reasoning of that. It is referred to, it is in reference, and I'll have to consider whether or not it's necessary, based on Your Honor's questions, to seek judicial notice of that other opinion to essentially establish what is incontestable, and that is simply that the interveners have pending claims against Zurich, not in this case, but in a closely related case that's been treated as a companion case.
Well, I would just ask, if you wish to file something, please do so within 7 days, and obviously Zurich will have an opportunity to respond.
I will, Your Honor. Thank you.
And can you turn to the mootness issue? Because I don't understand what is left when the funds have already been transferred, which was the last point that counsel made.
Well, I don't understand the argument that they make. They represented to the district court that if my motion to reconsider was granted, that they would return the money. The facts that they represent in this case in the record is that they're holding $1.5 million of that money in escrow, and that they would return it and will return it if the motion to reconsider is found to be incorrectly entered. There are no findings in support of the denial of my motion to reconsider. The fundamental findings of the December 19th order that Judge St. Eve made depend on a $420,000. And when it turns out that $420,000 has been stolen and is gone, and is and that the partnership is bereft and stripped of all its assets, there's no finding of fact in the subsequent March order that explains why that changed circumstance does not require the reversal of the modification and reinstitution of injunctive relief to do simply one thing: preserve the money in protection of the court and let everybody have their way at trying to prove their claims in this case. Fundamentally, what happened is they got the money without going through any adversary judicial proceedings, and we think that that is fundamentally unfair. And if it is abuse of discretion, the law is very clear that the denial of the my emergency motion to reconsideration without any findings of fact as to why the circumstances that we discovered about the theft of the funds, why those do not require a change of the result. It is an abuse of discretion to fail to make such findings of fact. And we have no explanation in the record for that, and so we ask, Your Honor, for reversal, or at least to remand for reconsideration in light of these new events in this ongoing story. Thank you.
All right. Thank you to both counsel. We will